When I started this podcast last year, it was an exploration of my own grief. I had lost my mum, my best friend, and I couldn't imagine my life without her. I suddenly had all these feelings of sadness, anger, confusion, and guilt. I needed to understand them, so I turned to my friends and people I knew who had been through a similar experience. It was eye-opening. We cried, we laughed, we processed. That podcast helped more people than I could have imagined. I've been inundated with messages and connected with hundreds of people who've lost loved ones and realized their experiences needed to be shared. There are still stories that need to be told. This season on Death Becomes Him, I meet people who have lost siblings, spouses, parents, and children. Though the experiences differ, one thing remains consistent. Talking about it is therapy. On today's episode, Mairead Ronan laughs when she tells me about her mom encouraging her to pursue a career in radio. At the age of 20, she didn't think she had the contacts or background to succeed in such a competitive industry, but her mom was her champion. She encouraged her, supported her, and gave her the confidence to land her first radio gig at just 21. Mairead opens up to me about the devastation she felt when her mum passed on the eve of her 21st birthday, and despite the sadness, she thrived thanks to the upbringing her mother had given her. Today, I am joined by Mairead Ronan. I've got two bones to pick with Mairead Ronan. I said this on Instagram. Oh yeah, Mairead. You're one of the reasons I done Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, and aren't you glad you did Dancing with the Stars?
I was approached to the Phillips family and I was like, oh, I'm not really sure if this is kind of for us. And was like, no, we'll pass on that. And then the girls told me our mom was obsessed with Phillips family and you were doing the Christmas special. We made total shows of ourselves.
You didn't.
But I think that was one of the shows and one of the times in life I said, life is so short.
Yes.
I'm now going to say yes to more opportunities and see what happens. And I think I've gained a friend in you. I think you're fabulous. That was I think people expected us to be more screamy than we were.
I don't think anybody, and I'm going to include myself in this, and anyone from the production team thought that you had the fight in you that you showed that day. I mean, we were saying, you know, early on that morning, oh, it's going to be such a pity to lose them so early in the show because they're so much fun. But look, that's the way it goes. And then the first race happened and, you know, I was watching it in the truck so we can see all of the screens. It's about eight screens. So you can see where the race is and where this family are and where that family are. And you came out of nowhere. You were like, get out of my way. I'm not losing.
And I was.
And you didn't. And it was hilarious and brilliant and just that you have this fight in you that you're going, I'm not going out now.
Thing about me is I'm not competitive at all. I'm not actively competitive.
I was going to say, you're not actively competitive, but you, at the same time that day in you, you said, I'm not losing now.
No, because I think I'm going to give 150% when my time's up.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of those people that if someone else does better or wins, I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
Because I always think, well, you deserve it. This is your time.
Yes, yeah.
I think I enjoyed Phyllis Family more than I enjoyed Dancing with the Stars. And I just spoke about you because we both have Joanne Byrne in common. And we seen Joanne recently and I went, Mairead had come in. I think you'd come in to visit. You danced, didn't you?
On the first show.
As champion.
As champion.
And then you were all smiling. You were like, oh, it's so good to be back. And I'm in the wardrobe room and you're saying hi to everyone. And I said to her, oh, when does it kick in? And you were like, it should have kicked in by now. And I went, it's not kicked in. That is one of the hardest shows or things I have ever done in my 19 career working in television.
It is, and it was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done. And I was obviously a bit mad hormones.
You just had a baby.
I just had my third baby and I got the phone call and stupidly I thought Larry Bass was calling to ask me to screen test to be presenter. And I was like, hi,
I've been there,
how are you? And he's
I'm available.
He said, so how do you feel about foxtrotting in January? And I went, sorry? you're not asking me to screen test for presenter. And he's like, no, we've got the presenter. And I was like, awkward. And I just said no straight away. I said, I have a 6-week-old baby in the back of the car right now. And he's like, oh, think about it. It'd be good for you. And you don't have an actual day job right now like you have had previous years.
So a bit of shade as well thrown in.
Like, thanks a million, Larry. Yeah. And I honestly put it out of my mind. And that night, when 20 minutes at night where you start talking to your husband, I was like, after all the madness of the day, we were watching the 9 o'clock news, sexy, you know. And I said, oh, do you know who rang me today? Larry Bass rang me today and said, would I be interested in throwing my name in for Dancing with the Stars? And Louis's like, brilliant. Yeah. And
I was was all go.
Straight away. And I'm there with like gigantic breastfeeding boobs that are throbbing, like, you know, ready for the 11
you're
o'clock
really
feed.
Really setting the scene now.
I know. And I was like, I can't do it. And he was just, yes, of course you can. It'd be great. You've gone on, you've been banging on about wanting to get back into shape. This is definitely going to do it for you. And you love the show. And I was like, okay. Anyway, I thought about it for a few more weeks and then I rang and said, yeah. And then I remember the day I signed the contract and I was feeding nursing. Bonnie going, what am I doing. So anyway, look, it worked out and it was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done. And like I worked on the Ray Darcy show like 5 days a week, 3 hours of live radio with a really, really small team. And like that was really, really hard, but really rewarding. And then this was really, really hard, but really rewarding. I did all the crying and stuff during it, but
I found it myself because
exhausting.
That time of year is always tough for me because I always say for us as a family, December is mom's birthday. Christmas, mom was obsessed with Christmas. Like when we start getting too old, so Santa wouldn't come to us anymore, but mom would still put my presents in the exact same place, you know, when I was a child, even though I've been living in London and have my own career. And then mom's anniversary is in February. But when I commit to anything, I like to kind of open all the doors to my life.
Yeah.
But I did find that experience so emotional because you're so vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I was recording first season of this whilst doing Dancing with the Stars. So I would do an episode of this and I would go back and I would be so mentally emotional. And then I'm trying to learn the cha-cha-cha, which is one of the hardest dances ever.
Ever.
So like it was full on.
I avoided that one. That's why I think I won. I never got it in my run.
That's why I didn't win.
That's why I won and why you didn't. I never got a cha-cha.
Shouldn't have done the cha-cha-cha. So you obviously were crowned the winner of the show.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Did you think of your mom during all of that? Because that was such a huge achievement. And you must have been thinking, I wish she was here.
Oh, like I have thought that so many times since mom passed away. Bizarrely, today is my mom's birthday.
Yes. And when I approached you about doing it, you'd said to me, I think you said to me last year, you do the show. And then, of course, I was back on the DMs in season 2. And I sent you the days and we said, we'll do Wednesday at 2:30. And then you said to me, oh my God, just so you know, today is my mom's birthday.
Yeah.
What are the chances of me giving you those days, not knowing when your mom's birthday is? I think it's a real sign that maybe we're supposed to be having this conversation on her birthday.
I totally believe in signs. And I think, you know, and I've read this, it's probably an Oprah book or whatever, but, you know, life speaks to you in whispers. And if you don't listen to the whispers, life will slap you in the face. And I listen to the whispers and I've been listening to them for about 10 years now.
Good whispers.
Good whispers and bad whispers, you know, going, okay, I need to.
But you can learn a lesson from the bad whispers.
You can. But today is my mom's birthday. So this night, 20 years ago was basically my mom's last birthday party and she had a big party for her 60th. So today she would be turning 80.
Wow. And oh my God. An amazing age. So 80.
Yeah. So she 60 was her last birthday. She threw a big party, live music, a band. It was like a little mini wedding and it was just brilliant. I remember what I wore. I remember us getting ready. I remember what mom wore. And it's a strange one for me because most people kind of pull away from their mums in their teens and particularly girls, I think, you know,
rebel.
They just go, oh, you don't know anything. You're stupid. You're old.
I hate you.
I hate you. Slam doors. Yes. All of that. You know nothing.
Yeah.
When actually they know everything. But I didn't have that relationship with my mum because I've got two much older sisters. I must just much older sisters. I was a surprise.
Oh, nice.
So mom had me at the age I am now, 40. And I was a total surprise. So
probably back then, you might say that's old. But now that's just, 40's not old.
But mom would have said, and she was in the Rotunda Hospital having me, she was
the oldest woman.
Ancient. Wow, like people thought funny. She was in visiting, like, to, you know, as a granny.
She's
like
a granny.
She was. So my sisters were 12 years older and 10 years older. So
way older than you.
Much
way older, sister.
So it's funny enough, the relationship I had with my mom for my teenage years was more sisterly, and my two older sisters would have been tough on me. Where were you? What time are you coming home at? Who are you with? Where were you? You know, why are you wearing that? Take that. That's too short. Mom, that skirt is too short. Tell her to wear a longer skirt. My mom's like, she's beautiful. She's gorgeous legs. You show those legs off. You're gorgeous. Out you go. So I am so grateful to the universe that I had that relationship with my mom, because I lost her the night before I turned 21. So,
I know.
You know, most people return to their mother in their 20s, but you know, for me, she was gone then. I didn't have her. So
what do you think your mom would have been like as an older lady?
I can tell you now, I know exactly how she'd be. She would be glamorous still. Always glamorous, always looking her best, would refuse to go grey. Always the blonde highlights. Would still wear heels, just not very high, but would still wear a heel.
Mairead, I'm impressed.
My mother was constantly saying to us and to my dad, like, she didn't just say it to the girls. It was like, you've nicer up there. No, take that. You've a much nicer top than that top. I don't like that lipstick on you. And she wasn't picking holes in us. Yeah. She was always saying, when you leave the house, leave it looking your best. And her line was, and we said it at her funeral, you never know who you're going to meet. And I remember one day after she died, like the state of me, like hair hadn't been washed in, and she could have been dead 6 months at the time, but hair hadn't been washed for a week, no makeup on. And I just remember walking up to the village just to, you know, get some stuff in the shop. And I saw my ex-boyfriend, and I remember all I could hear was, you never know who you're going to meet. Always try look your best.
So she was right.
She was bloody right. Yeah. So we all still do that now, you know. I was going into Today FM every day during lockdown when there was nobody there to see me. I was in a studio all on my own. My producer was working from home. There was nobody in the office. And I was one day driving in, I caught myself in the mirror going, why did you put on makeup on today? But it's just one of those things. It's just a habit. And it's a habit from mom. She also would have been, she was really house proud, but not in a way that it was never homely.
Like Hyacinth Bouquet.
Not like that.
Not
no,
that
she
extreme.
Was like, she was really house proud, and the house was always clean, but so homely. And she'd hate if she pulled up in the house after work and there was no lamps on. Who hasn't put the lamps on? Like, nice. You know, she liked soft lighting in her house. And she worked. She always worked. She loved working. She worked in Clontarf Castle for years, and it's bizarre. I now live 1 minute walk from Clontarf Castle.
It's so funny, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I do. I live right beside it. And she loved her job there. And
when you talk about your mom, do you enjoy talking about her?
I love talking about her.
Yeah, it's the same as me.
Yeah, I love talking about her.
Because you light up when you talk about your mom. You're smiling and you're so happy to talk about her. I'm the same.
And tonight we're going to be talking about her all night, because we're getting together in mom's house, mom and dad's house, and with mom's sister, her only sister who's alive now, and her two brothers. So we're just going to toast tonight, because if mom was alive, she would have had a party.
Yes,
and
it's a big birthday.
Yeah. So we're just going to be talking about her all night. But I also think, Brian, you know, when someone passes away and it's someone who you adored so much, I heard it with other people, you put them on a bit of a pedestal. And I think it's important that you don't do that, because they were human and they had loads of flaws. And my mom had loads of flaws. And I sometimes have read interviews that I've done, and, you know, I've seen me talking about my mom, and you're going, yeah, but I didn't say that she'd, you know, a mad temper. Like, yeah, she did.
Right.
She flew off the handle, you know, really easily. But I learned from that. I remember at a young age going, I'm not going to be like that. So I've taken all the good bits of my mom, and I've kept them and I've held on to them, and I've remembered her flaws. And when I had children myself, I went, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do all the good stuff my mom did, but I'm not going to do that. And, you know, she's fiery. They're a fiery family, you know. And so my mom would she would like lose her mind over something that I go, that's really not a big deal.
But in a way, you've learned from her.
I did, totally
so
did.
So you, not a better mother, but a better, you're learning from her. So she's trying to teach you how to do it properly.
Yeah, and it's funny, my dad told me after she died, of course, that she was really worried about me and concerned that I was going to be a walkover. So like 17, 18, 19, mom was like, oh, she's, you know, like she doesn't answer back and I'm afraid Marie's going to, she's the quiet one in her right. group that I'm afraid she's going to let people walk all over. My mum would hate that. And,
right.
you know, she's like, women need to, you know.
Stand up for themselves.
You have a tougher time when you're a female, regardless of what people think. I think yeah. you do have a tougher time. And she was afraid that that was going to be me. So it's mad to think the industry I ended up in, you definitely can't let yourself be walked all over.
Is it an Irish thing or is it a thing that we do with our moms that maybe we do put them on pedestals?
Yeah.
And I always think that because she's not around anymore, it's my duty to say the best things about her.
Of course. And you only ever want to highlight the positives. And like with my mom, there was so many. But I think for anybody listening to this who has lost someone, I think it's important not to lose sight of their flaws and say
of who they actually were. Yeah,
exactly who the person was. And grief is a strange thing. Like I obviously had never really experienced grief before. I'd lost grandparents, but I was quite young when I lost my grandparents and two had already passed away before I was alive. Mm. So, you know, my mum was the first time I had experienced real solid, awful grief. And I think for me, this is actually kind of a hard thing to say, but in the probably the 4 weeks before she died, I wasn't wishing her to die, but I was going, I hope this doesn't go on till September, which is what the doctors had said, because I just couldn't bear looking at my mum being this ill until, you know, till then. So we were told mum had about 9 months to live. And like my mum was told that. I can't imagine what it's like being told that information. Mm. You know, you know, you have about 9 months to live. There's really no more we can do.
It's like you wonder what goes through their mind.
Yeah, I mean, she was offered treatment, and obviously we wanted her to take everything, like every cocktail of
she
going.
Could take,
yeah,
you were getting.
And she was really, really, really brave woman, and she said, "No, it's got me. I want to go out of this world looking the way I kind of came into it looking like me, and I'm not gonna do that. So I want to enjoy the next few months that I have."
Do you think brave of her, or do you think no, take the drugs?
Well, we did think she should have, but you know, ultimately it was her decision. Her other decision, which was tougher, was not to tell anyone. She didn't want anyone to know she was sick.
No.
So she made us promise we wouldn't tell anyone. So she didn't want neighbors knowing, or she didn't want to be pitied, and she also didn't want to have to explain her situation to anyone, like, you know, former work colleagues, or she just didn't want that. She was incredibly private, and the people who needed to know
knew.
They knew. So like her family, her sisters, who she was really close to, her sisters, we knew, and my boyfriend at the time knew, because obviously he was going to be in the house lots. And but I didn't tell some friends. I didn't tell work. And I found that really, really difficult.
That must have been difficult, because it's almost like you're living it with your mom.
Yeah.
And how did you hide that from people that knew
you? It was kind of like living two lives. The life at home was what it was. And it was tough. And mom had loads of good days. Like, so we got that news in December. So her last Christmas was actually in hospital, in the Mater Hospital. And then she got out of hospital in the January, and she was definitely like, I don't want anyone to know. And we were told kind of September, she wouldn't see September. As it turns out, she died on the 2nd of April. But
2001, am I correct?
2001, yeah, right. Yeah. So I just found it was like living two lives. So yeah. I would just kind of go to work and do what I was doing. And I was college two nights a week and do that. And then I decided to just give up work. I decided to just stay at home with her and just kind of be around.
So at your mom's 60th birthday, yeah, were there people there who didn't know how ill she was?
So she wasn't ill then. That's the mad thing. So mom's birthday is today, July.
Yeah.
Mom had recovered. So right, mom had had cancer the year before
I'm
that.
Am I saying breast cancer?
Breast cancer, okay. Yes. The year before that.
So in 2000.
And she'd gotten over that.
Wow.
And got the all clear.
You must have been thrilled, delighted.
Thrilled.
All good, yeah.
Over the moon. It was wonderful. Imagine. And that's really the reason why she was kind of marking her 60th birthday, yeah, with a party.
Because she was here.
I'm here.
I'm healthy.
I'm feeling good.
I'm alive.
I'm looking good. I've got, yeah, everyone around me that I love. And it was a brilliant night. And then she actually found another lump. The week after her 60th birthday, mm, on the same side that she'd had breast cancer originally.
No.
Yeah, so it had come back in the exact same spot, which is awful. So she had surgery then, she had more treatment, and then again, scans seemed to be clear. And then she returned to work again, feeling okay. And in that December, she took bad really quickly. Mm. She was getting ready to go to work and she actually called my dad. I don't ever remember my mother ringing in sick to work ever in my life. And she had her hand on the wall in their bedroom and she's like, I just can't move my back. And my dad said, I'll call a doctor. I mean, this is probably the only time a doctor was in the house. Mm. And the doctor said, I think you should prepare yourself for some bad news, which was, Mom, I just thought she'd pulled something.
So and she's wondering, said, what's the bad,
yeah,
news?
The, yeah, the bad news would be that I think cancer has returned and returned somewhere that's not going to be good. So she was sent for a scan a couple of days later and it was bad news. The day she went for the scan, they took her in. Right. And like, I kind of think either my mum, it was like one of those really sneaky cancers, or my mum's pain threshold is like the height of, is up with the sky. Because, you know, it was bone cancer with spots on her liver. And she had been working, you know, a couple
and
of days
thought
beforehand.
She was fine.
And they took her in that day. So my dad had to go home and get a bag and take her into hospital. And they were giving her pain management that day. And that was like, I don't know the exact date, but I know it was really close to Christmas. So it was like the 18th or 19th of December. And Christmas.
From that December, I'm saying your mom passed away the following April.
Following April.
She got kind of 5 months, not even.
Not even.
Right.
And she was in hospital for a good 3 or 4 weeks. She
right.
was in hospital right up and towards the end of January.
You guys obviously had that high of mom being so in the clear. We got her back, everything sorted.
Yeah.
And then for that rogue to be completely pulled.
Yeah.
Again, so quickly, and then for it to be gone 4 months later. How do you get your head around that, or do you?
I don't know. Like, mom was really strong during all that, and that's the awful thing. I look back now, and she was the thing holding all of us together, and, you know, especially my dad. My dad took it really, really badly. Mom's illness really badly. I couldn't understand it. Mm. And, you know, my dad's so gorgeous, this kind of old-fashioned, you know, way of things that, like, good food and fresh air can kind of sort out anything.
That's
you
an
know
Irish
what I mean?
Thing. It's such, I think it really is.
It is.
I like it.
Know? And like, I never realized, I didn't know that when you have cancer and when it's at a certain stage, like, you really don't have an appetite at all. It's just gone. And, you know, dad would be cooking these like really nutritious meals for my mom for her lunch. And I'm like, Dad, she doesn't want it. She does. This is, she needs to keep her strength up. And I'm like, and I, you know, I look back, I was a kid, I was 20, you know, saying this to dad. And but my sisters were brilliant. My sisters were great too. One of them was possibly in denial of how sick mom was. And, you know, I've heard on previous episodes of this podcast who was the favorite child. It was in the one with you and your sisters, which I laughed at.
Clearly it was me, Mairead.
Clearly it was you.
Just putting that out. Hashtag fact.
Hashtag fact. Okay, well, hashtag fact. In my family, it was my sister Olga, who's the middle girl. She was, you know, obviously mom adored all of us, but
yes.
Olga was definitely mom's favorite in a way that she got away with things that myself and Simone wouldn't get away with.
Right.
And she knew that, you know, and they were
she worked
extremely
it.
Close. She made my mom laugh more than anybody in the family. And that's, you know, that's obviously you did
that's
the same.
That's the key.
It's the key.
It's the key,
Make them laugh. Make them laugh. But so Olga, I think, was possibly in denial at how ill mom was. And Olga was turned 30 that January and was like, you know, let's go to dinner to like our favorite restaurant. And I'm like, oh, I don't think mom's going to be able to do that. But my mom did. She was probably a couple of days out of hospital and got dressed.
For Olga.
Got glammed up, looked amazing, went to the restaurant, had the dinner, had wine for Olga. My mom did that for Olga.
Was your dad at all optimistic everything would be okay? Because, you know, she, the mother of his children, his soulmate, his wife, we were saying he's making all that food.
Yeah.
Was he still in hope that it would be okay?
I think it was, he was in denial. It wasn't hope. It was just, with, you know, kind of ignoring it. It was
ignoring
like,
the facts.
Ignoring the facts, ignoring how bad things were. In a way, that was also kind of good because life was actually... Life was kind of nice some of those times. Like, I had some of the nicest conversations with Mom during that time. Like, Mom and me one day were chatting about what was I going to do? Because I was the only one in all of my friends who really didn't know what I wanted to do. Like, everyone else was either almost finished college and getting their degree or had already finished and were in the space they wanted to be in. You know, I'd a friend, you know, who was doing chemistry and French and was working for, you know, pharmaceutical company and was doing really well. And I'd, you know, another person was doing really well in the bank. She was 3 or 4 years in the bank and already been promoted. And I was just like floating around.
Seems like a lot of pressure on someone.
I know.
What am I going to do?
I don't know what I'm going to do because I had dropped out of college. And the conversation with Mom was, you know, what do you want to do? And I said, I really would love to work in radio. And she's like, well, why don't you do it? And of course, the Irish thing, and when you're from a working class background, which I'm from, you know, we're from Finglas East, and we didn't know anyone in radio. And normally that's a way into these industries is like, you know, if you know someone,
put
they
a
might
good
help,
word in.
Put a good word in or come in and work experience.
You could go in and make tea and coffee for
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
I get it.
We knew nobody at all had ever done anything like that. So my mom was like, well, just look into it. And she said to me, why don't you just make a couple of calls there today, like on the landline, right? Which, when I look back, it's hilarious.
To Pat Kenny.
I rang the RTE newsroom.
You did not.
And I would love to know who took my call, but they gave me like 15, 20 minutes of their time.
Funny you say that. We have it here. Listen to this.
It was a man. It was a man anyway. And I basically told him my story. I was like, hi, how's it going? Would you have a minute to talk to me? And
were you 20, 21 at the time?
I was 20. And he obviously thought I had a story, you know, and like to give the newsroom. And he's like, sure, yeah, yeah. And I said, so I've dropped out of college and I really want
first
to work.
First red flag.
I really want to work in radio. And I just kind of don't know how to go about it. And he then told me, like one of the best places you can go to is Ballyfermot College. You know, he'd gone there. What? I could probably track him down. Like it was
January. We need to speak to this man.
January, February, the year 2000. Anyway, so then I just started looking into going to Ballyfermot and Mom said, okay, apply. So we put the application together and did all that. And the day of Mom's funeral, the 5th of April, I got a letter from Ballyfermot calling me for an interview for that course. Yeah.
Are you joking me? I just got goose pimples.
Yeah. So, and I got a place. I got a place in there and I've never looked back. And I had hated my first college experience so much. I absolutely hated it. It just wasn't for me. I met lovely people, but the course, I was like,
Can I ask what you were studying?
Human resource management. Right. I would cry if people came to me with problems like, you know,
leave me alone.
I would like, you're being bullied? I'm going to fire that person. So
I'm going to bully them.
Yeah, I'm going to bully them. Yeah, I would have been awful. So that course was not for me. So yeah, I ended up going there. I didn't know how it was going to go for me, but I honestly, week one, I said, this is it. I never missed a day. Assignments that were due in like on a Tuesday, I'd have them in the Friday before. I was that annoying. I was that annoying person. I loved it. I never saw it as work.
Do you think your mom was responsible for all of that? And why do you think when you brought up the conversation about wanting to work in radio or television, your mom was like, yeah, I totally get it. Let's do this.
Yeah, I'd had that feeling and that notion, you know, I had a notion of it for years, but I was always too afraid to say it
out loud.
Yeah, you know, I want to work in radio. Like, who do you think you are? Yeah. You know, so but then I think because of Mom's illness and because of where we were in life, just I was able to have that conversation with her, and she didn't think it was ridiculous. She thought, why wouldn't you? Why not?
I think it's because she was your mother and anything that you thought you wanted. Why can't you have everything? Because you're my child. Yes, let's go for it.
Although I do remember, you know, mom wasn't around for like X Factor or any of that time. She had already passed away. But remember Pop Stars in Ireland?
Yes.
And Nadine and all that. Yes. Like, we watched that religiously.
Show us your passport, Nadine.
Yeah.
What age are you?
We watched that show. And, you know, there were people who auditioned and were terrible. And mom was saying, God love them. Who has told them that they're good at that? And I'm like, you.
They're
you,
mothers.
You for years. Like when the state of me, like when I had like acne, when I had my braces, you'd be like, you are gorgeous. You're absolutely beautiful. And you know, I'm like, it's people like you. That's just confidence. That's giving you a bit of confidence.
Are you now telling me you auditioned for Pop Stars?
No, I didn't. I didn't. But I mean, like what, mom, I was going out and like I look back in photos and say, holy mother of God, the state of me. But my mother had told me I was beautiful.
But do you not think as a mother, I know your boy's the eldest, you've got two younger girls, when they get older, you will do and say
I do it already. You know, I do it already. I hear my mother through me when I'm talking to the kids all the time now. And then I when I'm going to lose my temper with them, when I want to go,
yeah.
Or I want to scream at them, I go, oh, no, they're three. They're nearly two. He's 13. Just hold it. And I do that now. And that, again, that's because of my mother.
Do you think when your mom was diagnosed and she was in so much pain, did you at all see any blessings or positives in the time that you had, that you were allocated this amount of time to get everything off your chest, to tell her what she meant to you and to kind of mend any bridges that maybe were broken?
Yeah, I do. That is, there is a blessing in that. It's kind of a double-edged sword.
No,
I mean,
totally.
I feel so sorry for people. And if a close friend who lost her dad, you know, was talking to him one day on the phone and the next day got a phone call to say, you know, he died in his sleep. I would have hated that to happen. But like I was kind of saying earlier on, if mom had been sick for a much longer period of time, I would have found that really distressing. So I don't know which one is right.
Well, I suppose for you and I had that.
Yeah.
That was exactly which
Your
was for
experience.
Us was I spoke to her on the phone. She was fine. And then 8 hours later.
All of us are going to experience, you know, death. And yet no one really talks about it or talks about grief. And grief for every person is so different. And even within the one family.
Totally.
Like, you know, my best friend Linda, who won't mind me saying this, we've got so many weird connections. It's actually freaky. So we met in Arnott's when we were, you know, 16, 17, working in Arnott's. Didn't like each other. I thought she was so up her own arse and like, too sexy.
Sorry, Linda,
all
if you're
the
listening.
Boys fancied her. And
ah,
I was the
that's,
friend.
That's why she didn't like her.
I was their friend.
She was the lead and you were just, yeah.
Anyway, actually, when we eventually got talking to each other, we realized we really liked each other. And then we've been best friends kind of ever since. But Linda's mom died in St. Francis Hospice of breast cancer 1 year after my mom died.
Wow.
It's so odd. And how we've both dealt with our grief completely different ways. Like, you know, I remember her mom's funeral. I walked in with my dad and my sisters and Linda gave me the biggest smile and the biggest wave like she had just spotted me in Cafe on Seine on a Thursday night.
Hey, how are you? Come over.
Hi.
You look great.
You know, that's what it was on the day. And she was, her mom loved to entertain. Her mom had a great job. She was a sales director and Linda was channeling that for her mom's funeral and making sure everyone had a drink
the show
afterwards
went on.
And making sure everyone got fed. And did you get your tea? Did you get your wine? There's a bottle of wine for your table. And she was doing all of that. Like, I barely remember my mom's funeral. Like, I honestly, it's a blank. I can't remember the hymns from it. I can't remember. I read at it, but I can't remember it. You know, so like, it's very, and I wouldn't ever judge anybody on their grief now, because sometimes grief kicks in 4 and 5 years later for people. You know, like mine kicked in, I think, as my sisters were coming out of it. And mine really kicked in a long time later when I became a mother. You know, I felt really robbed when I had Dara. I was 26, 27 when I had Dara. So I was kind of a youngish mom in, you know, today's terms. And I felt robbed then. But mum had been dead 5 years.
I know.
And I felt then...
It's because you needed her.
I needed her.
Totally.
I needed her. I wanted her. Yeah. I wanted...
Her guidance, her advice.
She...
To see him, to hold him, to meet him.
She always wanted a son. And especially when she did a couple of wines on board, she said, I would have loved a boy. And we're like, mum,
you've
got
Mom.
Three girls, you know.
Three beautiful daughters.
Beautiful. Oh, gosh, I know, but I would have loved a son. And I had one. And I was like, she's not here to see... And he's blonde hair. And I think he looks like her. And I felt really robbed then. But a weird thing, I know I'm jumping all over the place here, Brian.
Jump away.
I remember she was dead about 6 months and I was working in Arnott's part-time. And I think I just started in Ballyfermot. So I was working in Arnott's on Saturdays and Sundays. And I got the lift down. I was on the switchboard. Hello, Arnott's. Can I help you? I got the lift down on my lunch break and the doors opened onto the ladies' fashion floor. And I remember seeing this coat. And I was like, must tell mum about that. And it was a real thought of when I go back up, I'm going to do a sneaky free phone call from Arnott's and I'm going to tell mum about that coat because she would love that coat. Mm. And then, you know, like that was 10 seconds later going, what am I talking about?
I know. I still do that.
I can't ring mum. Like she's, you know, she's never going to see that coat. I'm never going to see that coat on mum. I can't buy mum that coat for Christmas. It was, and then I was a mess for the rest of the day.
I know.
So weird. So it comes. It's weird.
Things trigger you.
It's really strange.
Grief is a reason for doing this, and why we came back to do a second season of the show was because grief is never talked about publicly.
No.
How would you describe your grief? How long has your mum passed now? 19 years.
19 years.
Okay,
it's a long time.
So in the 19 years, how would you describe it? We're 2 years in. Does it get better? Does it get easier? Is it? Do you still have those moments? I'm going to get mum that coat. I'm going to...
I don't have those moments. I don't have those moments anymore. I think it definitely does get easier. But there's still flashes. And I think they will happen in 30 years. It's more moments missed. So, you know, somebody having a baby, like when I had, I had a daughter then. So I was a mother to a daughter and I didn't have my own mother around. My mum missed my weddings, both of them. there was flashes on during that time. Obviously, like, I went through a marriage breakup. I really, really wished I'd had my mum for that. And you know, I think a part of that was down to my grief. You know, I wasn't ready to get married when I got married. I wasn't ready to be a wife. And you know, that's all part of that failing. So grief was actually part of some of the failures I've had in my life too.
When you were going through moments that are very testing, like say for example when you went through the breakup of your first marriage, which you've said, does that heighten the grief?
It does. And it's weird, there was a lot of similar emotional feelings, because actually that is almost like another grief, you know. So I was trying to separate a grief of a relationship ending coupled with the grief of not having my mom there. And then the two of them being quite intertwined and going, like, taking a step back. Because when something fails, you have to look at why did it fail. OK,
yeah,
there's various different reasons, which I won't go into now. But part of it is I was too young. I wasn't ready. I didn't have my mom. I didn't have that solid, you know, advice there. And at the time of me getting married, my dad was suffering so bad. Mm. With the levels of grief, because, you know, mom had only passed three years. And I think that was nearly the worst time for my dad. It took two and a half years after mom died was actually probably the worst time for my dad.
Right.
Because it had totally, he'd realized that this was his lot. And he was quite young. He was his early 60s. His best friend, his life partner, they killed each other at times as well. Like I said, I'm not going to gloss over that.
No, yeah,
I'm not. Like they were, you know, we weren't the
we
Waltons.
Could all say that.
But also the whole part of his life where you're, you know, the work is done. The kids are reared. Mm. And you have this picture of going off on weekends on a cheap deal on the back of the Irish Independent that you might see a weekend for two in Wexford. All those things that they had started doing were gone. So I think dad really realized that I'd also moved out. So he was...
And you were the youngest.
I was the youngest. So he was home alone. And I think that was a really tough time for him. So, I went and got married. Dad was home alone. My sisters were obviously moving on. And it hit him really then that this was his lot now. Mm. And I talked to him lots about would he ever meet someone again.
And were you and your sisters okay with
totally
that?
Totally would have been okay with it, because I knew Dad never would have lived with anyone again. I knew that. Okay. I mean, that would have shocked me to my core. But I think we all knew.
Would you have been okay with it?
I would have been okay with it, because I think, again, it's selfish if you're in a relationship and you have somebody to go home to every night. And if they don't, and they're not erasing any memories, they're just moving on. And I think humans, we actually need other humans, you know, we do.
Companionship.
We need companionship, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think for my dad to have had a friend type situation, I would have been very, very happy for him. But he never did. He kept saying, nobody will ever be as glamorous as your mom.
For anyone listening to this, how would you say you coped with your grief? Do you cope with grief? Is there a way of dealing with it?
I don't know. I think for every person it is unique. Mm-hmm. It really is. I actually heard this quote, and I really hope I say it correctly, but grief doesn't change you, it reveals you.
Oh.
And I have seen that with lots of people who are grieving. So, like, you know, you can cling on to the sadness of it all, and you can hold on to that sadness, and you can say, I'm sad because this has happened to me. Mm-hmm. And some people do that, and that's their grief, and that's what they do. Or you can be strong with it, and you can reveal yourself as a strong person. That doesn't mean you're not sad. Mm. You know, it doesn't, you know, when you're grieving, you're not crying, you know, 12 hours a day. And that's what I would have thought grief was. I'm going to go through this phase. I'm going to cry, and then I'll not cry, and then I'll be okay. That's not what grief is. It can be shock for 2 years, and then it can be crying, and then it can be questioning, and then, like, it can be all those things. But I think it does reveal who you really are.
Do you mean in a good way or a bad way?
I think in both good and bad.
Right.
In a good and a bad way. It can reveal sides of yourself that are good and bad. And I think for me, it revealed how maybe emotionally strong I was. I didn't realize I was at all. I mean, I really didn't. I had no clue. I had no
Probably
clue even about myself.
Before to
yeah,
see,
but I had
you know,
no clue about really who I was. I mean, you know, Mam died on a Monday. I turned 21 the next day. And you know, her funeral was on the day that I had planned to have my 21st birthday party, you know, like, so I didn't realize I was strong. I didn't realize that there could have been a selfish side to me too, because I was very much all about me and minding me
yourself
at the time. I would have seen that. I would have seen that in myself, and just kind of blocking out everybody else. And wouldn't maybe not asking my sisters how they were at the time. Because again, I looked at them and said, they're much older than me. They're fine.
Yeah.
You know, they had it
until
they were 33 and 30. But I'm, you know, I'm 21 this week.
Yeah.
So I saw I was very strong, but I definitely saw that there was a selfish side to me that I hadn't really seen before. And, you know, had to work on that and change that.
It was Lottie Ryan that said in our chat, it was something that was true, and she said shock can be a very good thing because you're almost so in shock that it gets you through it.
Yeah, which is what I suppose a shock does. It can, you know, it can get you through. Mom's wasn't a shock. Mom's death wasn't a shock. Mom's illness was a shock.
Yeah.
So, you know, we would have had those few months of the shock getting us through, you know, that Christmas, which was just bizarre, like opening presents like robots that morning.
I know.
And then getting into the car and going to the Mater Hospital to visit mom on Christmas Day. And, like, you know, your mom,
yes,
my mom was all about Christmas.
Yes.
The house was just gorgeous.
It's like Santa's grotto, tinsel fecking everywhere.
Maureen had no tinsel in there. Maureen just didn't do tinsel.
Sorry, or bingo, we know
she
that now.
She didn't do bingo. She definitely didn't do tinsel ever.
Sorry, I've just embarrassed
really
myself.
Really expensive Arnott's decorations
all
over the place.
Sorry.
But she would, like, the place was just so beautiful, and you know, the food and the shopping and the gifts. And then we were opening gifts from mom that were put under.
And you were probably thinking, what the hell is going on?
It was just, this is just weird. But we were going through the motions and we were numb and in shock. And then we went down to see her on Christmas Day. It's shock can be Shock can be good, though. It can just propel you forward
a
little bit.
Yeah, I think it numbs you. And, you know, I've spoken openly about it. And I think when you said you don't remember your mom's funeral. I did not enjoy the funeral. Enjoy is probably the wrong word, but no one enjoys the funeral of their mother. Let's just stop that.
I'm going to cut across you there. I think some people do enjoy the funeral in that there's stories that they haven't heard.
Right.
You know, and you can hear this brilliant story about your mom.
Reminisce.
I have been at funerals where I know the family have said, oh God, I didn't know that about dad, or I didn't know that about mom.
Yes.
It was so good to hear from their work colleagues who we didn't know. So maybe enjoy is the wrong word, but it's almost therapeutic to hear this other side of the parent that they may not know, like people from the golf club or like people from work. And so people do get something from the funeral, but that didn't happen to you.
Yeah, I even remember we got a chance to meet some mom's friends she went to school with.
Yeah.
Because I've always said I only ever seen my mom as my mammy.
Yeah, she was nothing else. She didn't exist before you came along. I
didn't see her as someone's boyfriend, a fiancé, a friend that went out, that kissed a boy, you know, that went on a first date. And then only looking back on it now, 2 years later, you know, even before that, we got a chance to meet our friends, and mom used to pick mushrooms, and some people that she used to pick mushrooms with. We're like, oh my God, she had a life
before.
Because I'd just seen her as a mammy, but she wasn't just, I seen her as superhuman, like a superhero, because I never seen my mom as vulnerable. I never seen her as old. It's like we think our moms and dads, of course, but our moms aren't human.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's that thing of putting them on the pedestal.
It's funny though. You just think they didn't exist before, you know, you were born.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a mom, I have struggled to kind of fully remember life without Dara. So I was talking to him about this time, and he's like, what are you talking about? I wasn't alive. And I'm like, were you not there? And he's like, no, mom, I wasn't alive. I'm like, God, that's mad. You've just always been there. It's like he's always been in my life.
Family.
And he clearly wasn't. He came along when I was a few days after I turned 27. So
do you think by not having your mom around anymore, sad and devastating that is, it's put you on the track you're supposed to be on?
It does. And mom said something to me when she was really sick at home. And she said that I can do more for you up there than I can here.
No.
Yeah. And I do. I think she has. I totally think she has, because I think things have happened to me in my life that I don't deserve. You know, I think I've been extremely lucky. I've been unlucky sometimes too, but I think she has steered me around and helped me navigate my way around those situations. But I have been very lucky in my life since my mom passed away, and I don't know if I've deserved that look. So I think she is.
Why do you think what makes you think that you don't deserve the look?
I suppose, look, you know, the industry we're working in, I've been given opportunities that I still go, me? Really?
But surely you deserve them because you've worked hard to get them and you've proven yourself when you've got the opportunity.
Yeah, so have loads of people. It's probably that whole imposter syndrome thing, you know, we all have that. And I don't think it's just in entertainment. I think people have it in other industries as well. But I've, you know, like, calls I've got or opportunities that have been put my way, or, you know, jobs I've gotten, I sometimes feel like, really? Me? Okay. I'll give it a bash. Like Dancing with the Stars, I like went into that going, okay, week 5, week 6, I am absolutely chuffed with myself. I'm going to give myself the biggest.
Did you have a week? I had a week, and I wanted to
switch up.
I wanted
week
to go by. That was my goal.
Yeah,
and I went on 7, so I was chuffed.
Yeah, I wanted to switch up week. I was like, if I just get that, feels to me like a good space to be in, and you know, people will still remember that you took part in the show.
Of course, yeah. And switch up's exciting.
Yeah. So that, you know, there's thing that's what I'm saying. Things like that happened. I mean, I never in a million years, I was the second from the bottom on the bookies list.
Right.
You know, so that's what I mean. Like you're second from the bottom on the bookies list and you win. And I'm going, that was my mother. It's nothing to do with votes, nothing to do with my dancing, nothing to do with all the hours I put in.
It's mom.
That was my mama. But my dad said after that, like, oh my God, there wouldn't be a hat big enough to fit on her head right now.
What do you think she would have been like? Actually, that's a really good, she would have been there, obviously.
Oh, there, every week.
And you're crowned the winner. How would she have reacted?
Oh, she just would have been so proud. The mad thing is, right, I have, and I'm going to take a picture of this when I go home tonight, I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
I've kept, like, obviously I have a few things from mom, like I have a beautiful ring that I wear and.
No tinsel.
There's no tinsel.
Or bingo books.
There is a Christmas decoration, but there's no tinsel.
Okay.
But I kept the two last items of clothing she bought for me. Because I was older, you know, your mom doesn't buy your clothes anymore. Yeah, you buy your own clothes. But she bought me these two tops. And one of them is a black t-shirt from Oasis. And it just has star in little diamonds going across.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I found that again, because I've put, you know, I've moved house so many times, like since mom passed away. And I found it when I was packing up. Oh, God. When did I move house? Last May. I was packing up the house. I had one Dancing with the Stars and I found this box with the t-shirt. And I'm like, holy.
Did you know the t-shirt was in it?
I knew. I didn't know the t-shirt was in that box. No, I actually didn't know what was in the box. But there's two tops. One is a desperate boob tube from Warehouse, fit into it. Yeah, half of me would fit into it now. And the other one was the t-shirt with the star over in little stones. Yeah.
So funny how you're meant to find stuff at the right time. Because, you know, I found that I am on the path now with me now back living in Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, I've not lived in Ireland since 1998. I remember I went to Stansted Airport to train with Ryanair and we're working class, you know, family from Rathangan and Kildare. And my mum and dad gave me, I think, 250 Irish pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all they had. Like that was it. And I left six girls behind me and I went and I moved to Stansted. And the fact that I'm back here now with my husband, you know, mom walked me down the aisle. I'm so chuffed we had that together. You know, we don't have any children yet. And that's sad that she's not around for that. But I think I'm supposed to be here and I'm supposed to be doing, when it was Fittest Family or when it's Dancing with the Stars, stuff that I said, no, no, no. And the fact that mom's not here, I've done that. And it's allowed me other opportunities to meet other people, to open other doors.
Yeah.
And I have to think that out of something that was so bad and horrendous, that there is potential light and love for me.
She's almost guiding you down a path that you probably didn't think you would go down. You probably never saw yourself moving home, not at the age you
were. No, never did. I never thought I'd be back with my husband living in Ireland. We're house hunting at the moment and I would have done the shows that I've done because I said no before. No, no, you're not just for me, or, you know, this is what I'm doing. So it's so strange that I feel like it's when I want her the most, because every time we go looking at a house and I do think, would mom like that kitchen? And then I go, well, of course, she's not here. That was so stupid. So strange.
But you will still think that.
Yeah.
And when you're picking a kitchen, you'll still go, mom would like that.
Does that ever, no, that doesn't leave
you. Doesn't go away. No, right. Doesn't go away. Like, this top that Arthur said was lovely on me, I bought this top because I'm like, mom would have worn something like this.
Wow.
So mom loved a sleeve. I rarely ever wear sleeveless stuff because I never ever wear white jeans because my mom told me white jeans do nothing for you. Like,
I'm just going to check under the table. Okay. Hang on.
Black.
She's not in white jeans.
Yeah.
Gorgeous Gucci shoes, but no white jeans.
White jeans do nothing for you, Mairead.
Did you laugh a lot? You're saying there about how you thought grief was going to be crying constantly. You were saying how in funerals, some people might enjoy the reminiscing and speaking of the person. I said, it was Rachel Gurry that we chatted with, and she had said to me how they laughed constantly. And I said, we laughed ridiculously over, I love me mom for 4 days and we laughed.
Yeah.
And then we were angry.
Yes.
But we laughed, like we cried, but we laughed a lot. Did you laugh at all? Did you, reminiscing and talking and going, remember that?
And we still do now. We still do. Myself and my sisters will still talk about mom. Like if something happens, I go, can you imagine what mom would do now if that happened? Like if we're in a restaurant and they get the order wrong because my mom was a waitress, I'd be like, can you imagine what mom would do? Or, you know, signs in shops meant nothing to my mother. Like, I remember this one time, and I was telling the girls this story. I was about 15. So, you know that, like, awkward teenagery age where, you know, I was really close to mom, but when she did something that was embarrassing, I would.
Because you're cool, she's not.
Exactly. We were in Tesco, which was called Crazy Prices at the time. And we
How old are you, Mairead? I don't even remember that.
Oh, yes, you fucking do.
No,
yes,
you
fucking do. Anyway, I was in Crazy Prices with mom, and it was coming up to Christmas that year, and she decided that year she wanted the turkey boned and rolled. And
oh, posh.
And then we were there and there was this giant sign behind the butcher counter saying, you know, if you want your turkey boned and rolled, it must be ordered by such and such a date. And it was 2 days past that date. So mom had missed the date. So
Maureen.
The butcher said, sorry, no, you can't. And she just said, excuse me, I'm here 3 times a week since you opened And just because I've missed the date by 2 days, you're telling me that you can't, and I'm just moving away from it. Mortified. She did her thing.
Did she get it boned and rolled?
Of course she did. Maureen always got what Maureen wanted. So she got it done. And then this is the cuteness of her though. The day she went over to, the day it was to be collected, she wasn't going to collect it. She sent my dad and me over to collect it. So I went over with Dad, and Dad was like, oh, here to collect, you know, the orders for Farrell. And he said, oh, the tiger showed her teeth last week. Like, I went back to Mum and I was kind of proud of her, like going, the butchers are all afraid of you now, Mum. They called you a tiger. And she's like, you know, we weren't going to bone and roll my turkey.
Quick question. Did the turkey taste okay?
It was amazing.
Just
it
in
was
case.
Actually
just
amazing.
In case.
It was one of the best Christmas turkeys we've ever had.
But isn't it amazing you have that memory and we can laugh about it?
Totally. We can totally laugh with those things. And then there's another thing that every single time one of us in the family gets tipsy from wine, right? So we have this thing and we say toffee shopped, right? And nobody outside of the family will know what we're talking about. Like my sister would go, oh, I had a great time with the girls. She was like, I was a bit toffee shopped. And that just means like tipsy.
Merry,
not drunk. Just a bit toffee shopped is a bit merry. It comes down to one story around, we were sitting around the dining table and we'd had like a lovely meal. I obviously was only a kid. I wasn't drinking, but my mom and dad and my sisters were having a bit of wine. And my sister talked about a girl who she'd been in school with who had just opened up this little coffee shop. And my mom looked confused. She's like, strange. So I was like, no, it's doing really, really well. It's quite busy. And my mother was like, I just don't understand. Why on earth would somebody open a toffee shop?
Right, she heard toffee instead of coffee.
Just like, oh, roared laughing. And then Mum got cross because we were all laughing at her. So ever since then, it's toffee shopped is when we're all a bit tipsy because Mum was a bit tipsy and heard coffee shop as toffee shop. So
it's good you have those memories.
It is good to have those memories. Were and we you, still use them every day.
Were you a religious family?
We were, yeah. We were, like I went to Mass every Sunday and Mum got Mass Sundays and, you know, she'd go to do the Stations of the Cross and I went, you know, when you had to do that on Good Friday, and she went to Lourdes probably 3 times. They definitely got toffee shopped in Lourdes, I can tell you. I never went. I'm the only person in the family who didn't
wine.
Go. Yes. But we weren't, it wasn't an overly religious.
Right, but probably like us. I ask you that because, you know, I question and guests have questioned, where do you think your mom is and like, and what do you think she's doing?
I have to, and I have always believed, I'm one of those cherry picking Catholics who I take the stuff I want and I've ignored the stuff
you
that
the
I just don't agree
behind,
with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like Brian, everyone talks about self-care now and mindfulness. And I remember as a kid, like I'd switch off at Mass. I didn't hear what the priest said.
I think we all did that.
I really liked the hymns, but I used to switch off and I'd think about school that week or maybe a little row I would have had with a friend, or that was my mindfulness back then. And I think there's loads of people are missing. I'm not start preaching people go back to Mass, but I just think I grew up with having that space of mindfulness now that probably my kids don't have, you know, where you go and you switch off as a family for 1 hour a week. And this, you know, I have to say the choir were very good in Finglas. So there was like these lovely hymns in
the
background.
You were just there for the songs.
I was there for the songs. So I was there for the entertainment. And we had that as a family. And I think it was a lovely thing to be in. And then there was, I used to do novenas with my dad. I did that as company for Dad. But I definitely got something out of those. I don't know if they were, again, they were a bit more like life lessons type things, you know. And I remember, you know, there was probably late teens at Mass one day. And the priest gave a sermon on short-term pleasure can sometimes lead to long-term pain. And he was talking about like, say, cheating in a relationship. You know, in that moment, you might want to go, ooh, yeah. But like long-term pain, because it could destroy something. So that's a lesson I took from Mass. And I remember talking to Mom in the car, going home from that, going like, that was a good sermon. You know, because they're normally not. Mm-hmm. And myself and Mom would have talked about that one. And I have to think she's there watching me.
So you're saying by cherry picking, you think is she on a cloud? Is she in heaven?
I don't know. Is she in heaven? Is she around me? Is she whispering to me in the wind sometimes? Right, is she the robin that was in my old back garden?
She's everywhere.
Like, it's, you know, look, robins are everywhere in Ireland. Yeah. Of course they are. I know that. There's people going, but there's a little robin that used to like land in the back garden of the house I rented for 8 years. And then, you know, we bought our house, and we renovated a house, and now we just go, that's the same guy. It's the same Robin. I'm telling you. They come right up to the door. I'm like, it's my mom. And every time when I'm thinking of things, I'm like, that little Robin is trying to tell me something. So, I mean, look, it's probably all in my head, but
I think we all, I've done that. I think we all do that.
I've used, signs. And like I say, look, life whispers to you. And sometimes I take the whispers as my mom trying to whisper to me.
Did your mom know what was happening, like, at the end? And did she question where she was going? Was she fearful, or was she?
I think in the beginning she was a little bit fearful, but then she definitely made peace with what was going on, and she actually made peace with the brother who she hadn't spoken to for years.
Oh wow!
And which was, you know, that's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Probably one of the last people to really have a conversation with her, because she decided herself she wanted to go to the hospice, which again was tricky for us and for my dad, because obviously he wanted to keep her at home, but she said, no, I need to go to the hospice. I'm in a lot of pain and I need to be pain free. Mm. And so she was in St. Francis Hospice for just 5 days. So she had definitely made peace with what was going on. But she kept a diary for the last few months. My sister has that, and it's really nice to read. Like, there's, you know, her thought process in it. And again, thinking I was really quiet and worried about me, was that's in the diary.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that is in the diary. And she planned her funeral.
That's a weird thing to do, isn't
it? Yeah, like she planned, like, where she wanted us to go afterwards. And it's typical Maureen. Not soup and sandwiches. I want a sit-down meal.
Oh, boned and rolled turkey.
So that was that. We had that for mum. And like what she wanted to wear. And she didn't want to go to a funeral home. She made that very, very clear. She wanted a wake at home in her house.
Yeah.
And so that was very, you know, she very much made that a plan. And and she wanted to be cremated. I'd never been to a crematorium before, my mum's. So that was kind of strange. Actually, it was very strange.
You don't have to tell me the ashes. I'm just asking. What did you do with the ashes?
We've kept the ashes. Okay. Ashes. And that's the one thing. It's bizarre. She planned everything, but she never planned what to do with the ashes afterwards.
Maureen, what do we do?
What do you do?
We've done everything else.
So they were at home in Dad's house for years, in her favourite room in the house, right. Sitting on top of the piano. She made me take piano lessons for years. And it wasn't bad, actually. I've returned to it this year. I've bought a piano.
See? How weird.
I bought myself a piano this year. I bought it in lockdown.
And please play it on Instagram so I can laugh.
Okay, I'll do that. I'm going to do that for you.
Thank you.
Moonlight Sonata, Beethoven.
Thank you.
And then my husband, we were all talking about, I'd love some ashes and I'd love some ashes, but like, should we separate more?
I know.
And Louis bought myself and my two sisters these mini silver urns that are love hearts, and just to take a small piece of the ashes. So we now all have a piece
of
one.
Oh, that's nice.
And so she's still at home and we all have a piece.
If you were to go to that little piece, we have the ashes, would you talk to her?
Oh yeah, totally talk. I was talking to her last night. My sisters did it all the time. But like, I've hanging up in my wardrobe is one of her tops that I wear all the time. She wore it to my communion, and it's incredible quality. Yeah. I still wear it.
Wear it.
Yeah, it's a black and white top that's hanging in my wardrobe, and I would throw it on. And I don't like, it's not, I'm going to wear this today because it's mom's birthday. Like, I could have thrown it on this morning, but yeah. I didn't. I wear it like on a Tuesday in February because I want to, and I just want to feel extra close to her. I also have a beautiful suede dress belonging to her that I throw on as well.
And she sounds very fashionable.
She had amazing style. She actually had amazing style.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us have lived up to the style icon that Maureen was.
Okay. Well, at least you know that.
We know.
And sometimes the honesty sets you free.
She knew that as well. Do you know what she did for me one time? I know we're probably like, I'm waffling on now.
No.
But to talk about like the fact that, you know, when you pull away as a teen and you come back in your 20s, and I didn't have that. Like, we were really, really close in my teenage years. This Levi top my sister had that was a real cash top, and I wanted to go to this underage disco in Club M.
Rebel.
When I was about 15. Ooh. And mom was like, I said, that Levi top would look so good up my jeans. My mom was like, okay, I'll sneak it out of the wash for you. So my mom snuck it from my sister's wardrobe. She said, she is not wearing that top. She's absolutely not to wear that top. And my mom snuck it out. I put it on in the garage beside the boiler where you turn the heating on. And then I put a big shirt on over it and I wore it out the door. And then in mom's car, I took it off and I had the top on. So I was hiding clothes I was wearing belonged to my sister. My mom was helping me in the whole operation.
Go to the disco you probably shouldn't have went to.
She was dropping me there in the top that my sister didn't want me to wear.
Did you get away with it?
I got away with it. Oh, she had it washed. I just had to fling it into her bedroom the next day. So she had it washed and back in my sister's wardrobe without her.
She was like your accomplice.
She was. She was amazing.
Thank you so much for sitting down and talking to me today, because it's so interesting. I'm loving hearing everyone else's stories, mm-hmm. because they're all so different, but we're all united in one thing, and that's grief. And when you talk about your mom, your face does completely light up in a way that I talk about my mom, and it's so nice to see.
Yeah.
And I hope you've enjoyed the conversation and that went, because I, you know, my whole thing is talking is therapy, and I really believe that. And I think if we all spoke a whole lot more about everything in life, mm-hmm. I think we'd all feel a whole lot better. So I hope this conversation has helped you, especially being on your mom's birthday and you chose to spend it with us. I and really appreciate that.
There's nothing nicer than talking about it for an hour with you. And just before I go, you're in a much rawer space, and you and your sisters are, and your dad is, than I am right now. It will get better, and you will stop shedding tears, and you will just laugh about her and her memory and all the gorgeous things you did together. And that time is definitely going to come.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mairead.
Thank you.
Though 20 years have passed since Mairead lost her mom, I find it so comforting that she still remembers her so well. Her and her sisters still talk about her with such vibrancy, and I know that Mairead's own children are growing up with a strong sense of who their Nana was. Next week, in the season finale of Death Becomes Him, I talk to Jackie Fox. Jackie's story has been one of the hardest to record. In 2018, Jackie's daughter Nicole tragically died by suicide following years of online and offline bullying and physical abuse. Jackie has experienced such a huge, earth-shattering loss, but talks to me about her fight to introduce Coco's Law and how she's ensuring her daughter's death will never be in vain.
I didn't see Nicole that morning. The night before, Nicole had sat on my bed and she, you know, they were talking and she said, "Night, Mama, love you," and like Cocoa Pops, love you. And she went into bed and she says, "Love you, Mama," and she sent me hearts. Which isn't, that wasn't unusual for Nicole to do, do you know what I mean? Because she'd do things like that for me, or, you know, she'd send me nice little things. And so I didn't see her the next morning because my dad was sick. He has Alzheimer's, and every Thursday morning I'd go down and mind my dad while my mum went shopping. So it wasn't unusual not to see Nicole that morning. I came back at 3:20 and I came back from my dad's at 3:20 and I just ran in. I was a little bit late, so I grabbed the boys. I had to drop one of my sons to work and then go on around and collect my 14-year-old Lee from school. I went to the chipper after. And I regret that so much, going to the chipper, because I always thought if I just went from the school straight home, would I have got there on time?